Every day, children go to school to learn. But how can a student learn if their school district can't afford to buy books or repair the building? Cameron Klein begins a three-part series on education funding in Illinois by examining the complexities of the education funding system.
Your education, however you define it, is a tool you've used every day of your life. You began learning before you stepped into your first classroom and continued to learn after your formal education was completed. Regardless of your path, the years you spent in elementary school, junior high, and high school were some of the most influential and important steps you took in educating and developing yourself. Illinois' educational system is comprised of 906 public school districts that are funded by a combination of state, local, and federal monies. According to University of Illinois Government and Public Affairs Professor James Ward, the funding system is antiquated.
As we evolved from the 19th century into the 20th century, we developed a system of state school finance where the state picked up part of the cost of public schools and the local governments picked up the rest. And the current system of financing public schools that we have in the state of Illinois really dates from about 1928, where we instituted something called a foundation formula, a formula we still live with today, even though some of the bells and whistles have been changed and the numbers have been altered. But a foundation formula simply says that the funding of public schools is a shared state and local responsibility.
An average Illinois school gets 56% of its money from local taxes, 10% from federal sources, and 33% from the state. Illinois Board of Education spokeswoman Kim Knauer says the state's contribution is decreasing.
In 1975-76, the state was paying 48% of the cost of educating kids in kindergarten through 12th grade. And it's been, except with a few blips here and there, it's been pretty consistently downhill since then.
The state aid formula is used to decide how much money each district receives. The formula considers how much money the state legislature allocates to the district, the district's average daily attendance rate, their level of taxable wealth and local support, as well as the number of educationally disadvantaged children in the district. University of Illinois Government and Public Affairs Professor James Ward says tracking how the money moves through the funding system can be confusing because there are separate accounts for everything from building repairs to life safety improvements.
You really can't follow the dollars. We don't know where the dollars from legalized gambling go because it would be like your own personal finances. You may work a full-time job at a part-time job and give a gift, and all that money goes into your wallet. And when you pull a dollar out or a $5 bill, you don't say, oh, this came from that source. It just all goes into the common pool. It all comes out of the common pool.
Every morning, the students at T.E. Culbertson Elementary School in Joliet, Illinois, line up for class, not knowing that their education is affected by their school's budget. Culbertson, like every public school, operates under the current educational funding system. According to Ward, the system places the main funding responsibility on local government.
So what's been discussed is that if we can shift that balance so that the locals provide less than 60% and the state share increases from 32% somewhere up towards 50%, that we'd shift the burden to the state and therefore shift the burden off of the local property tax onto general state revenues.
Changing the way districts receive funding could reduce the gap between rich and poor school districts. State Board of Education spokeswoman Kim Knauer explains the possibilities.
Those school districts that are less wealthy would rather see more money given to them from the state in the form of general state aid. Wealthier districts that get less money through the formula would rather see more of it put into the categoricals because that's where they get dollars.
The funding differences between districts across the state are huge. Districts with healthier tax bases can allocate more money for education. Knauer says more money often means better students.
And even though you're all going to study math, science, English, social studies, maybe a foreign language, music, computers, whatever, the quality of education and training that the teachers had are going to vary greatly in a community that has that's spending $12,000 a year versus a community that's going to spend $4,000.
The state's funding problem is regional. According to Governor Edgar's senior advisor Al Grasbol, the issue affects the entire state.
If we increase the income tax and lower property taxes, to a great extent, the suburban areas, which have, on average, higher percentages of wealth and higher incomes, will read that they are going to in effect, pay more money. Downstate, where you have a lot of rural areas based on farm economies, if you lower property taxes there, they view that that is a major benefit to them.
There are two main ways a school could increase its funding. First, it could develop new income sources to generate more taxes for the city. And second, the school could lobby Springfield to decrease local funding while increasing state funding. This would remove the tax burden from local sources. Then the district could ask for some of the tax back with a referendum. Joliet Township High School Board Member Tana Gray says referendums are difficult to pass in districts like hers.
And I think it was between 29 and 30 years since we finally, since we've had an educational rate increase. It's one of the problems in Illinois and probably other states that this is such a difficult struggle.
Besides state income tax and local property taxes, Illinois schools receive money from the Common School Fund. The fund is a combination of lottery money, sales taxes earmarked for education, and taxes generated from legalized gambling. Unfortunately, the fund can't cover everything, so the remainder of the money comes out of the state's general fund. In 1990, the Illinois legislature created 10 riverboat casinos in an effort to revitalize river towns. Today, 9 remain. If a city is lucky enough to have a riverboat, they could give some of their gambling revenue to their schools. In 1992, the Empress Casino came to Joliet with 2 boats, and in 1993, Harris Casino followed with 2 more. Because the casinos bring in about $21 million a year, Joliet gives some of its riverboat earnings to about 40 organizations and programs. In 1997, it gave $550,000 to each of its school districts for a one-time expenditure. Riverboat revenues have revitalized Joliet, but the benefit goes beyond taxes. Empress Casino Public Relations Manager Mary Phelan says Harris and the Empress like giving something back to the city.
We're the 6th largest employer in the Will County area. I'm not quite sure which one. We are in Joliet itself, but in Will County we're the 6th largest. 76% of our employees live in Will County. They're local employees. We're a major employer. We're a major corporation. I think it's any corporation's responsibility, no matter what their business is, to be involved in the community.
Public Relations Manager for Harris Casino, Caroline Qualls, says Harris has adopted Joliet Central High School.
So what we do is we fund the intramural, which gives the kids who were good still a chance to play. It's a great program because, you know, we believe that you have to look at the student from a holistic point of view.
Riverboat money is an easy source of income, but University of Illinois Professor of Business Administration John Kint says there are hidden costs.
It has not been economic development in most instances. As a matter of fact, a recent study out of Wisconsin showed that around the casinos, people were spending 10% less on food, 25% less on clothing, and 37% had dipped into their savings in order to gamble.
Governor Edgar's education reform plan was the latest attempt to change Illinois' school funding system. The process began in 1995 with the commissioning of a study. Chief of Staff on the Governor's Commission on Education, Cordelia Meyer, says the study served as a yardstick for reform.
Basically, the commission identified 8 principles which should serve as the foundation of an education funding system.
The commission made recommendations about how to ensure a quality educational system at a minimal funding level. It also addressed the need for local control, property tax relief, and the importance of a reliable funding source. The study's recommendations became the foundation for the Edgar Plan. The plan would have increased your personal income tax by 24% and at the same time decreased property taxes. This would have created $1.6 billion for education. Governor Edgar's senior advisor Al Grasbol says the governor's reform efforts had to start in Chicago.
Had the new Chicago School Board not been as successful as it has been, it would have been very difficult to get a dialogue started on funding education in Illinois, because there would have been too many people saying any change we make is just pouring more money down a rat hole.
The governor's reform bill has been considered in 3 versions. The first version was a constitutional amendment, but it never made it to the ballot. And the second version passed the Illinois House, but failed to make it out of the Illinois Senate Finance Committee. Senator Lawrence Walsh says the second version failed because of a partisan vote.
Under the rules of the Senate, the president of the Senate basically dictates what gets heard and what doesn't get heard. And so then that's why evidently they stood behind it and it must have went down.
Many proponents of the governor's second plan blame Senate President Pate Phillips for the destruction of the bill. But Senate President spokeswoman Patty Hsu says Phillips was just looking out for the taxpayers' interests.
To the taxpayers of Illinois, Senator Phillips in many ways is a hero. People told us all over this state, from way down south in southern Illinois all the way up to Rockford, they are not willing to pay more in income taxes for schools.
After the second version failed, Governor Edgar's senior advisor Al Grasbol predicted a third version.
I would not be surprised if a plan emerges that attempts through a variety of other revenue sources other than the income tax to try and find sufficient funds through some smaller taxes, through some streamlining efforts, to at least accomplish the first part of the governor's plan, which is to establish a foundation level and to thoroughly fund it.
The plan would have raised more than $600 million for public schools, but like its predecessors, it failed. Governor Edgar has been disappointed with the defeats of his reform bills, but realizes this is a difficult struggle.
Well, I've been disappointed, but then I've been here for 30 years and we've yet to do anything this significant. So, we keep at it.
Illinois' educational system tries to meet the state's diverse needs, but it's not perfect. The vast funding differences and shrinking state contributions make it difficult for districts to pay their bills. In part two of my series, I'll look at Joliet, Illinois, and how its two casinos have revitalized the city and increased local school funding. I'm Cameron Klein.